Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, good morning. Why don't you have a seat? Thank you so much for being here. If you're a guest today, my name is Trey Kelly. I'm the lead pastor here. I want to thank you for joining us in the room. I want to thank you for joining us online. I'm very, very excited about today. We're kicking off a brand new series called Regeneration. And to kind of get us started today, I've got to make a statement that is incredibly obvious. It's probably the understatement of the decade. And that statement would be this: a lot has changed in the last 12 months. A lot has changed in the last 12 months because of COVID, because of the pandemic, and I'm sure you are sick of talking about COVID and the pandemic, and I promise that's all we're going to spend time talking about, the COVID and the pandemic, simply to say, man, everything has changed over the last year. I was reflecting about all the different things that have changed, all the things we've had to learn, all the new procedures, all the new policy. I mean, you're all wearing masks. That's different. We didn't wear masks a year ago. But as I was reflecting, there's really one area that, for me, has changed more than just about any other area. And I'm curious if many of you have experienced this as well. Because a lot of things have changed over the last 12 months. A lot of the way we think about life, a lot of the things that we treat as normal, a lot of the things that we treat as okay have changed. But for me, probably the single biggest thing that has changed about my life is the way I define a certain word. It meant one thing to me before the pandemic, and now that we're hopefully coming to an end, but really what I've learned for the last 12 months, I think about it completely differently now. And the word, I'm not going to keep you in suspense, the word is success. I had one definition of success before we went into this global pandemic, and I have a completely different definition of success now. And I'm talking about in every area of my life, as a human, as a dad, as a husband, as a pastor. But honestly, it's here. It's been in the organization of this church where the way I and we have defined success is just had to change. And I don't even know that we were definitely necessarily doing it wrong before. It's just that this past 12 months has really clarified something for us, because before the pandemic, man, we were like any other healthy, growing organization. We measured success by growth. Like, are we growing? We had different metrics. We have different things we would measure about, you know, how many people are attending and how many are engaging online and what percentage of them are serving and what percentage are in groups and how many new people do we have coming each week. And we measured these things and we had dashboards. And we would look at these dashboards weekly. And really, starting in 2020, man, first 2 months, the dashboards were all green. Things were going great. Everything was going up and to the right. We were growing. And it was like, yes, we're successful. And then a global pandemic hits. And we had to stop doing sort of the event that we do on a weekly basis that kind of drove things. We couldn't gather for a while. So we had to pivot online. And that's just not the same for most people. And then when we did feel like it was appropriate for us to start regathering, we did that, and over 50% of our church said, thanks, we're going to stay online because it feels better to us, and we totally understand that. That's why we have online. But we had to change the way we thought about success, because when the pandemic hit, all the measures and all the metrics went red. Some of them went to zero. And so for the first few months of this pandemic of trying to figure everything out, I'll confess to you, I felt a bit like a failure, because everything I had used to measure success was gone. And I began to notice that some of the staff felt like failures. And the funny thing was, at the beginning of this pandemic, we were working harder than we'd ever worked to try to figure things out, and we felt like failures. And so we would just spend time talking with each other. And I would spend time in prayer saying, God, like I'm doing what I think you want me to do, but I don't know how to measure this. I don't, are we wrong? Were we measuring success wrong? Because what we discovered was we had decided to measure our success on things that were beyond our control. We had no control over the pandemic. We had no control over the regulations. We had no control of that. So the metrics and measures we had used to tell us if we were succeeding or failing, we had actually based on things we couldn't directly control. And so we began to question the wisdom of that. Like, is that smart? Is that the best thing to do for an organization? And is that the best thing to do for someone who's supposed to be, you know, in a relationship with Jesus? And so we began to pray and say, hey, Jesus, is this what you wanted us to do? Do you want us to base our success or failure on things we can't control? And he very kindly and lovingly said, no. And he said, see, the thing is, I never have. But because some of those things were happening, you were able to convince yourself that was the measure of success or failure. But because of an external event, those measures have been taken away. And so now it's time to talk about what success actually is. And through prayer and reflection and really just realizing what I've known but didn't really put into practice, God kind of revealed to me and to us as a staff that we had been defining success incorrectly. And so I said, all right, God, how do you define success? Specifically for Christ followers, what do you look for and how do you deem job well done? You succeeded today. And he said, it's simple. It's one word. Success is obedience. Do what I say, when I say, how I say. And in my mind, God would say, you're successful. I say, but God, but what about all these other things? And what God basically begins saying to us is, no. You're confusing your obedience with my results. They're not related. I give you commands. I ask you to obey them. You obey them, you've succeeded. Whatever happens over here is beyond your control. So why would I ever allow you to base your personal feeling and your success or failure on something that's completely beyond your control? And so we began to think about it. We began to reflect on it. And honestly, it's been the biggest lesson I've learned over the last year is that I've got to learn as a pastor and as a leader and as a dad, as a Christ follower, to base my personal success on things I can control. And what I can control is how well I obey my Heavenly Father. And what I can't control is literally anything else. And so, if you're here today and you're a Christian, you consider yourself a Christ follower, you're probably listening to this and you're probably sort of nodding along like, yeah, I mean, I get that. I've known that. I kind of understand that, but that's not the way the world measures success, and that's not the way that you can talk about it. And like, right, but then a global pandemic happens and no one knows how to measure success, and so it's a clarifying moment. And it's been a clarifying moment for us. And if you're here today and you wouldn't consider yourself a Christian, which is one of the things I love about our church, we have people who come every week who don't consider themselves Christians. Maybe you're in the room, maybe you're online. And you hear us talking about, no. Success is simply obeying. Success is simply doing what God wants you to do. You probably have one of two reactions. Well, that sounds too good to be true. Or that just sounds kind of like a cop-out. That sounds like an excuse for failure. But the reality is this, that really is just the goodness of a relationship with Jesus. Because he is the all-knowing, all-powerful Lord of the universe. He is in charge of everything. And so when he says to us, hey, just trust me, just obey me, just follow me, measure your success or failure based on how well you do that, and trust me for everything else, it really is a level of freedom and peace that when we begin to actually understand it can change every single area of our lives. Which is why, for the entire year of 2021 so far, all we've talked about is redefining success. Now, you didn't know what we were talking about, but it's what we've been talking about. We spent the month of January trying to redefine personal success. And we defined that as a life built on Jesus, turning to him for everything we need. We just finished a series in February on relationships. And the secret to success in relationships is to build them on Jesus. And to obey Jesus, and to trust him for the results in that relationship. And so today what I want to do is I want to launch one more series, the series that we're calling Regeneration. Because if you consider yourself a Christ follower, there is a command that has been made of us. And if obedience is success, we will only be successful when we obey this specific command. But it's not one we often think about. But the ramifications are huge. And so today I want us to talk about what we as Christ followers have been commanded to do. What those of you who are checking out faith, when you become a Christ follower, because we pray you will, we want you to know in advance what is required of you, what is called of you as well. And I'm going to warn you, it's an intimidating word. But hopefully what we're going to see over today and over the next few weeks is that we're already doing it. We just simply need to base how we do it on Jesus. And so what's commanded of us? What is this command that we must obey to truly achieve success in our lives? It's one word. Leadership. Every single one of us in this room who considers ourselves a Christ follower has been called to be a leader. Every one of us in the room who's going to choose to become a Christ follower has been called to be a leader. Now, in a room like this, there's probably two extreme views on this topic, and maybe you're each extreme or somewhere in the middle. For some people, when you say we're all called to be a leader, your response is, well, of course I'm called to be a leader. Yeah, I get that. What else is new? The other extreme is, no, I don't think you mean me. You mean somebody else. I don't like being in front of people. I don't like to do that. I'm not a leader. And maybe you're somewhere in between. But here's the deal. I promise you, I'm going to show you today, every single one of us in this room has been commanded by the God of the universe to be a leader, which means he's ready to equip us and prepare us to be a leader. See, today's just week one. Today's an intro to the series we're calling Regeneration. And for weeks 2, 3, and 4, we're going to talk about how to be a great leader. We're going to talk about how to make sure we're giving out the right things to the people that follow us. But today it's an intro. I know you're not ready for how yet. I know there's a lot of questions. So today we're going to answer three basic questions. Question one, where? Where does Jesus actually command us to all be leaders? That's where we're going to go first. Then we're going to answer the question, okay, if he commands that, why? Why on earth would this be something he'd command of us? And if, once we've learned where and why, then we're going to say, okay, who? Who does he want me to lead? And so there's a possibility we're going to end today. You may have even more questions than you have answers, and that's perfectly okay, because this is just week one of a four-week series. But my prayer is that we leave here today less intimidated by that word of leadership and more open to the calling that God has placed on every single one of our lives to play our role in his story. And it begins with the word leadership. Because I know for some people, that's a daunting word. It's an overwhelming word. So let's redefine it. Leadership is simply influence. That's all it is. It's the ability to influence someone else's beliefs and behaviors. If you have studied leadership at all in any capacity, maybe at work, maybe in your neighborhood, maybe you've read leadership books, then you've probably heard of a man named John Maxwell. John Maxwell is like the leadership guru of the last quarter century. I mean, he's the leader of leaders. And here's what he says about leadership. He says, everyone is a leader because everyone influences someone. Every single person in this room has the capacity to influence someone else's beliefs or someone else's behavior. If you are a parent, you are a leader because you have the ability to influence the beliefs and the behaviors of your children. If you're a teacher, you're a leader. You're influencing beliefs and behaviors. If you're a coach, you're a leader. You're influencing beliefs and behaviors. If you are a boss or if you are a manager, if anyone in your sphere ever comes to you for advice, ever asks your opinion, ever says, hey, what do you think? And you have the ability to influence them to think or behave differently, then you are a leader. There's no debating it. We all have this capacity. Which leads us to the question, okay, well, if we have this capacity, then why does this need to be commanded anyway? Why would Jesus need to make us do this? And where, Trey, where? Some of you, man, you've read the Bible probably more than I have. You're like, where does Jesus command us to be leaders? Where does this happen? Well, it's actually in one of the most famous things he ever said. If you grew up in church, maybe you've heard of it. It's called the Great Commission. It's literally Jesus' last words on earth. This is after he's died on the cross for our sins. After he's come back to life, he spends several weeks with his followers, kind of preparing them for what's about to happen. He says these words, and then he ascends into heaven. And one of the eyewitnesses to this event, a man named Matthew, who was there, he wrote down what Jesus said. And it's in this moment Jesus commands all of us who are going to follow him to be leaders. If you have your Bibles, turn to Matthew 28. If not, we're going to have it up here because here's what he says. Matthew 28, 18. Jesus came and told his disciples, I've been given all authority in heaven and on earth. In other words, I am the leader of leaders. I'm in charge of everything. I've been given all authority. This is like when you call your kid in, and before you tell them something, you remind them, hey, just remember, I'm your dad. You know, you're just trying to bring to mind who's in charge in this room. That's what Jesus was doing. He's saying, hey, guys, I'm in charge. You can trust what I'm about to say. You can believe what I'm about to say because I've been given authority over everything. And then he says these words. He says, therefore, because I'm in charge, go and make disciples. Because I'm in charge, go. Be active. Go pursue other people. Pursue the world. But actually, the way that Greek verb is written and the tense it's in, it actually means more as you are going. So what he's really saying is, as you go about your day-to-day life, as you do everything you do, as you go this way, as you go that, as you live, make disciples. Another word for disciple is simply follower. So he's saying, as you live, make followers. You know who has followers? A leader. John Maxwell has another quote. He says, if you are ever leading and you turn around and no one is following, you're just a guy taking a walk. So what Jesus is saying is, hey, I'm in charge of everything. This is what matters. As you're going, lead. And you want to say, lead who? Well, he makes it clear. As you're going, make disciples of all the nations. So lead everyone. This is also how I know he wasn't just talking to this first group. Because there was 11 of them there at the time. They were going to add a 12th in a few weeks. But Jesus' mission was global. He wanted to change the world. It was going to definitely require more than those 12 men. He wasn't just saying for them to be leaders. He was saying for them to lead people to become leaders, to make disciples, to make followers of all the nations. How are they going to do that? Number one, they were going to baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Just like they were baptized, they were going to demonstrate behavior. And then he says these words. Here's what else I want you to do. I want you to teach these new disciples, teach these new followers to obey all the commands I've given you. Teach them everything I taught you, which includes this. So if he wanted them to be leaders, he was saying, everyone you convince to follow you, teach them to be a leader, which leads us to today. We are all here because those men obeyed that command. We are all the followers of the men who received this command at first. And part of the training was to pass down the commands. Which means every single one of us in this room who considers ourselves a Christ follower and every single one of us in this room who's ever going to become a Christ follower has been given a direct command from Jesus Christ as you are going in your day-to-day life, lead. And not just lead other people to Jesus. Teach them, influence them to obey all that he's taught us. Teach them to build their life on Jesus, just like I have and just like many of us have. Teach them that. And what some of you are thinking is, that sounds a little above my pay grade. I don't feel equipped for that. Why would Jesus command me to do that? I don't know how to do that. Well, this is what he said next. He said, be sure of this. Don't worry, is what he means. He says, I am with you always. I, Jesus, am with you always, even to the end of the age. He was saying, I know it's a daunting task. I know it's a big undertaking. But I'm going to be with you. My Holy Spirit is going to be with you. I've left you this amazing gift that I've called the church. And you're going to have a place where you can gather. and you can go to for wisdom and guidance and strength. And they're going to be there to equip you. And they're going to be there to cheer you on. And they're going to be there to help you. And they're going to be able to celebrate. And they're going to be able to show you how to do this. You will not have to do this alone. But make no mistake, Jesus would say, if you want your life to be a success, this will be a part. The decision to embrace in all of our lives the task of leadership, which is simply all leadership is influence. This task of leadership that simply means influence. To choose to influence the people in our lives to choose to follow Jesus just like we have. Every one of us in the room have been called to that task. We just read it. But to me, the question is really, why? Jesus, you could have done this many different ways. You could have maybe just chosen the best and the brightest. Like, why everybody? Why are you saying we all have to lead? And I think it was because Jesus was actually a human for 33 years. Jesus was born a human. Jesus walked as a human for 33 years. He experienced everything we've experienced as a human. And in those 33 years, I believe it shaped his view of this issue. Because in those 33 years, he discovered something that he had seen from the outside, but never felt himself. And what it is he discovered the power of legacy. See, legacy simply means a gift handed down. Legacy is something passed from one generation to the next. Traits, characteristics, habits. Sometimes it's actually money. But a legacy is passed down from one generation to the next. Jesus himself lived legacy. Jesus was a carpenter. You know why? Because Joseph, his earthly father, was a carpenter. That was passed down from one generation to the next. All of us in the room right now are living with the legacies that were left for us. Some are good. Some are not so good. Some are completely physical. Hair color, certain characteristics. Some are, medical preconditions that you have to watch out for more than somebody else because a relative had it and it's been passed down to you. Some of them are work ethic. People will say, I got the work ethic of my grandfather. I got the work ethic of my mom. Some people will say, I have my grandma's nose or I have my grandpa's temper. See, we all understand naturally the concept of legacy because we're all living it. We're all living with things that have been passed down to us. We had no control over those legacies. We received them, and then we have to figure out how to navigate and what to do with them. See, Jesus understood that the only certainty about legacy is that you will leave one and that I will leave one. We will leave something behind for the people that we influence. And so when Jesus is commanding us to lead, and when he is commanding us to lead with him, see, what I think he's doing is he is giving us a roadmap to success. He's saying, you're going to leave behind something. Why not leave behind best thing? Why not pre-decide right now? Why not choose the legacy you're going to leave and the legacy I'm going to leave is going to be built on something bigger and stronger and better than me? I'm going to leave behind a legacy built on Jesus. See, it's like every command Jesus gives us, it's always for our good. It's always for our betterment. He's giving us permission to relax. He's giving us permission to not have to worry so much about the future and to say, you know what? I'm just going to trust my God. and I'm going to leave behind the best thing I know to leave behind. And I'm going to obey him in the process, and I'm going to trust him with the results. Because here's what he understood, and here's what he was trying to get us to understand today through the Great Commission. It's this. It's that a legacy built on Jesus is a gift to everyone who receives it. You want to leave the best thing imaginable for your children? Leave him Jesus. You want to leave the best thing imaginable for your students, for your players, for your employees? Leave him Jesus. Because a legacy built on him is a gift to every single person who receives it. Now, how do we do that? How do we leave that legacy behind? That's what we're going to talk about for the next few weeks. We're going to talk about how we do that. But for today, remember, we're not going to talk about how yet. We've learned where it's been commanded. We know why it's been commanded. Last question for today is who? Who am I leading? Not who should I lead, not who will I lead in the future. Who am I leading right now? And this is what I want you to spend some time praying about this week. I want you to spend some time with God and say, God, hey, open my eyes. Who am I leading? Where do I currently have influence on the beliefs and behaviors of other people? And I'm going to give you a little help because there's two ways you need to think about this. First, you need to think about it in terms of positional leadership. These are people you have a position over, and they have to listen to you. At work, if you're a manager or a supervisor or the boss, the employees who report to you, they have to listen to you. So you have positional leadership over them. If you're a teacher, if you're a coach, you have positional leadership over those people. If you're a parent, you have positional leadership over those people. Because if they don't listen, you have the authority to do something back. You can punish, you can make them do sprints, you can fire them. And so you have positional leadership. Most of us in some arena in our lives have people that because of our position, we have influence over them. And I just want you to pray and ask God to just begin to open your eyes to the arenas in which you have positional influence, positional leadership. By default, they must listen to you. And then ask God to open your eyes to a second group. And this is relational leadership. If leadership is assumed in positional, it's earned in relational. These are the people who nothing will happen to them if they don't listen to you, and they still listen to you. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends, your spouse. People that you actually have no authority over, but because of your relationship, you have earned the right to be influential in their lives. You have earned the right to speak in. And I want everybody in the room to ask this question. Okay, this isn't an adult only. This is an all skate question. Everybody can ask this question because in our organization, we start very early giving people the ability to step into leadership and influence. As early as fourth or fifth grade, we are looking for opportunities for those students to begin influencing preschoolers. And then our middle school and high school students, we look for opportunities for them to exert influence in our elementary environments. And even our older high school students, we look for ways for them to exert influence over our younger middle school students because we know how crucial this is. And so we want to begin training and teaching this as young as humanly possible because we want to help them get it right. And so everyone can ask this question. Hey God, who am I leading? Where do I already have relational influence? Where do I have positional influence? Open my eyes to this week and then ask one more question. You ask, who am I leading? Then ask, where are they going? Currently, the people under my influence, the people that I have the ability to speak into, where are they going? And be careful when you ask this question. Because you might look at one person and say, man, look at their life. Their life's doing great. Boy, I did a great job. Or you might say, whoo, yikes. Not quite headed the direction I wanted it to go. I must be failing. See, it can be very easy in leadership to measure our success or failure by the behaviors and actions of the people we're trying to lead. But remember what we learned at the very beginning. Remember, success equals obedience. even in leadership. Success equals obedience. Jesus was perfect, and one of his 12 followers betrayed him. Was Jesus a failure? No. But it can be so easy for us, especially in the closer relationships, parents, teachers, coaches, to measure our success or failure on the results. And what I'm praying Jesus can begin to teach us today is, no. Your success or failure is still measured by obedience. Did you listen to me? Did you follow me? Did you make it easy to follow? Great. Then the results are between them and Jesus. And again, I know that's hard to process, but that's what we're going to talk about for the next few weeks. But to kind of help you think about it as we wrap up, one of my church heroes, one of my favorite pastors on the planet, is a man named Andy Stanley. He has several churches in Atlanta, and he's also an author. And when I was in college, I actually read a book he wrote called The Next Generation Leader. Gosh, that was like 20-something years ago now. It's horrifying. And it was all about how to lead for the next generation. And it was to leaders saying, this is how we can lay the groundwork for the next generation and what the next generation is going to need. And there's a line in the book that's just been coming back to me over and over and over again as I've been thinking about this series. And here's what he says. He says, in leadership, success is succession. Now, on the face of that, you can hear, well, no, there it says right there. Success is results. Success is if they follow. But that's not what he actually means. Keep reading. He says, if someone coming along behind me is not able to take what I've offered and build on it, then I failed in my responsibility to the next generation. See, he's not saying if they don't succeed him, it's failure. He's saying if he doesn't make it easy to follow him, he's failed. And so what we're going to spend the next few weeks talking about isn't the results. It's going to be what we can do as we partner with Jesus to make it as easy as possible for every single person we influence in our lives to follow us to Jesus. To make it as easy and as engaging and as inviting and as kind as possible, we're going to learn tactics. We're going to be incredibly practical. But at the end of the day, it's, hey, what can I do to pass the baton well? I want to be the best baton passer in the history of the world. And Jesus, once they take it, that's between you and them. And the reason that has to be the measure of success is because for the vast majority of us, we will not ever see the true full results of our legacy. We won't see what we left behind. So all we can do is leave the best that we can. One of my favorite musicals of all time, and probably the biggest musical phenomenon of the last quarter century, is the musical Hamilton. It tells the story of Alexander Hamilton. He came to this country as an orphan, young man, and ended up becoming the first U.S. Treasury Secretary, and rose and improved his life. And the musical is great. It kind of tells his entire story, and at the end of the musical, spoiler alert, he gets shot by Aaron Burr, which I think we all know. At the end of the musical, he gets shot by Aaron Burr, and as he's dying, he has this reflection on his life because he's young and he hasn't accomplished everything he wants to accomplish. And there's a line he says that has just stuck with me over and over and over as I've been thinking about this series. And I think it's so poignant for us as we wrap up today, because here's what he says. He says, legacy. What is a legacy? It's planting seeds in a garden that you never get to see. And what he means is, legacy is planting something and you won't see it fully grow. You don't get to see the results of what happens. And Jesus would say, that's cool, because all I want to do is teach you to plant well. And so what we're going to do over the next few weeks is we're going to learn how to create the most fertile garden possible, how to use the best seeds, how to create the best irrigation system, how to create barriers and protections around it, perfectly place it for sun and for shade. Because we can't make that garden grow. We probably won't get to see the full results of that garden, but we can leave a most perfectly positioned garden we possibly can to ensure the greatest success for the next generation. That, I believe, is the call of every single one of us who loves Jesus. Every single one of us choosing to build our lives on Jesus understands this truth, that a legacy built on Jesus is a gift to everyone who receives it. So let's spend a few weeks learning how to leave a legacy built on Jesus. This week, just invite God in. Ask Him to open your eyes to the who in your life. Who positionally? Who relationally? Who is He giving you the capacity to influence? Ask Him to open your eyes to where they're currently going, and then come back next week as we learn the steps we can take to partner with Jesus to make it as easy as possible to follow us towards Him. And see, when you have a conversation like this, when you talk about Jesus and leading with Jesus, it can sound overwhelming. Say, well, I'm not equipped for that. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a biblical scholar. I can't answer all of the questions. And we kind of thought you might feel that way. And so we wanted to end today with a story. A story of someone who chose to leave a legacy. And they actually got to see some of the results of that legacy. But it wasn't through some deep conversation. It wasn't through some theological understanding. As you're going to see in the video, it was as simple as a shared moment on a PowerPoint slide. Check this out.
Hi, my name is Erica Armolino. I have been at Wellspring for about a year and a half, and I am a senior at Coastal Carolina University. I first came to Wellspring through a professor at my university. It was my junior year of college. I recently changed majors, and the first class I had was public health, and it was a Professor Lowry. And I remember the exact day perfectly. It was the first week of school, and we were just kind of getting to know each other. She pulled up a PowerPoint, and it said, "Everything you need to know about me." And it went with her husband, her kids, her elderberry business, everything you need to know. But the one thing that I noticed was Wellspring Church in the right-hand corner. Everything she said about Wellspring, with welcoming arms, smiling faces, hugging people, as soon as I walked in, I just saw everybody's smile, and just like the energy was just amazing in this church. And that following Sunday, I actually went to church, and as I was walking up to the door, somebody hugged me, I don't remember who, and they just had the biggest smile on their face, just welcoming arms. And as soon as that happened, I fell in love with Wellspring.
My name is Jessica Lowry. I'm the founder and CEO of The Power of Elderberries, and this month I celebrate attending Wellspring for 10 years. I was a lecturer at Coastal Carolina University for 10 years, and I created a safe place in my classroom solely off the purpose of my own experience as a college student and how I could relate to my students in that way. So I can remember every day driving to school, getting ready to teach. I would actually pray on my way to school, and I would ask God to give me the words to speak to my students that day. I would listen to worship music on K-Love. I would listen to encourage stories on my way to school. And I opened my class many times with having my students journal. I would have questions to prompt them to write about, and during that time, I would play worship music really softly while they were journaling. Sometimes I would share stories that I heard on the radio within that morning. I actually shared a PowerPoint slide the first day of class, just introducing myself as a person, my hobbies, what I enjoyed doing, where I was from. And in that PowerPoint slide, I also had that I love my church. And it was actually the first day of class that I openly shared that I attended Wellspring, that I absolutely love my church, and I welcomed anyone to attend with me whenever they felt that they wanted to.
I was trying to find a faith foundation in Conway. And as soon as my professor, who has been here for years, talked about a church, I knew that it was some way of God telling me that this is where you have to be. And this is where you're gonna grow. And ever since then, I have come every single Sunday, and I have grown in this church. Since coming to Wellspring every Sunday, I have branched out a lot. I got asked to be a college group leader, which has opened up a lot of doors and meeting new people and different testimonies in faith, as well as a kids ministry leader for fourth and fifth graders, which has just bring me so much joy on Sundays that I just love coming to church even more on Sundays now.
So the first time I saw Erica at church, I walked my family in and checked in, told them my last name, and it was just a young gal. I actually didn't know it was Erica because she had her mask on, and she, you know, checks us in, and I spell the last name, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, you were my college professor," and I was like, "Wait, what? Who are you? What's your name?" And she kind of peeked her mask back a little bit and, you know, said who she was. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, how are you here? Like, how did you even know about Wellspring? How long have you been attending? This is amazing." And it was in that moment where she said, "I'm here because of you." And it's just, I got goosebumps. I got tears in my eyes. My daughter was standing there next to me and listening to all this. And I think what shook me up the most about Erica's story is that I didn't know that she was coming. Of course, I had other students before that, you know, they had said they were going to come. But with Erica, I didn't know she was coming. So when I asked her how long, she's like, "I think I had you 3 years ago, you know, teaching college." And I think she's been coming a year. So it was that seed that was planted 3 years ago that now has brought her here today. I think it's important to share a piece of my story. As a college student, I suffered a lot of depression. I was broken. I experienced PTSD. I didn't really feel loved, worthy, or enough. I knew my parents loved me, but I didn't feel that love from God or really having a purpose as a college student. I can remember talking about mental health and depression and writing those words on the board. You are loved. You are worthy. You are enough. And if there was one thing I wanted my students to walk away out of that classroom feeling, it was those three words. And whether the seed was planted through doing different things like that, it's amazing. Just, you know, if they were able to come.
I seriously would not be where I am within Wellspring Church without Professor Lowry putting Wellspring Church on her PowerPoint that day.